I'd like to call this March 13th Amherst Town Council meeting to order. First, the business, if everybody please silence their cell phones. The next two items, B and C, will be the Pledge of Allegiance and the invocation. Ms. Dawn Thomas is going to lead us in the invocation. If you're uncomfortable with either the pledge or the invocation, you may, if you feel like you'd like to, you can leave. And Captain Watts will retrieve you and bring you in after. So if we'll all rise, please.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Lord Jesus, we just come to you tonight, first of all, to praise you for who you are. Thousands of years ago, you came down and at about this time was crucified and now sits at the right hand of the Father, advocating for us. We also thank you to live in a country where I can say what I just said at a town meeting. America, the greatest country in the world. Lord, be with this council as we have our meeting tonight, and may it be positive, and we'll be sure to give you all the glory. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen.
Just a friend here? Oh, there he is hiding. Okay. Gary, Ryan, yep. Would you slide that podium over this way, please? And
let me know when to stop.
Let's stop. And okay, Mr. Fred, we had asked you to be here tonight to update the council on Neighbors Helping Neighbors and in relation to what y'all do here in the town.
Good idea.
Okay, thank you. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members for inviting me. And it's been a while. It's been a while. First, let me tell you, we appreciate your support from the past, big time. It started off with just a donation, we bought turkeys with those donations, you know, during Thanksgiving. And turkeys were hard to find. And so we found ourselves finding getting too big of a turkey or too little of a turkey. So we decided to switch. And which I think I had mentioned to Sarah, and we had talked about getting Food Line gift cards for food. And so we did that, and it was like a light bulb went out in their face. You know, now they have a choice of whether to get a ham or a turkey. And so we've been doing that for quite a while. And every time we do it, we always mention where it comes from. And they're excited about that as well. So it's been a tradition. I'm not sure how long we've done this, but it's just part of what we do. And it's made a big difference in how they come in. It's all about choices with our food bank. When you come in, we're still that client choice where you can come in and you choose what you want. That's important. That's dignity. That's treating them like they're going to a grocery store, which is what this is. If you haven't been there, you need to check it out. It's a nice little gym where people can come. Instead of getting a box, they get a cart, and they shop, and they choose what they like. Very little waste on that. So we continue to do that. We're one of two in the whole Region 2000 to do that. The other one is in Lynchburg. It's called Parkview Missions. But I can tell you it's a big difference. You know, just the atmosphere is a big difference. The two most highest in this county, as far as clients who we serve, and by the way, we are serving 2,000 per year per household. So what that means is that there's a representative for each household. Doesn't mean how many people we feed, because each household can average anywhere from 2 to 7. So you have to take that number, and we can give that number. But it's a much larger number than 2,000. So you end up having a big number within the food warehouse. It's changed with Amherst and Madison Heights. Of all the region we serve, and we have no boundaries. So if you're in Bedford and you want to come here, you come. If you're in Nelson, you want to come here, it's no boundaries. So when I say the region, this number that I gave you is just us, Madison Heights and Amherst. So Madison Heights currently does 70% of that 2,000. And Amherst is now at 30%. I say now, because we've increased in 2 years. It was 28%. So it's gradually increased. And there are also some things that have changed a little bit that you need to know about. After COVID and beyond, there was a reduction in food donations within our community. Amherst, Madison Heights, everywhere. Just a reduction. People were not giving canned goods and food like they used to. You know, whether it was a canned drive at a church, it just kind of, after COVID and beyond, it was an adjustment. Reduction in beef products, all of a sudden, you're probably seeing some of that now, are starting to decline. We would get most of our beef, we get some donated, we don't get that. We now have zero beef in one of our walk-in freezers. And the other one is with the USDA, mostly chicken, mostly pork, and we did have a farmer out here who donated a pig, so which is helping us make it through what we consider a big change in what we were used to. This has just happened. This happened again. It's been happening probably. We saw a little change about 18 months ago. Now we're really seeing it. We're also seeing a reduction from, we get about 90% of our canned goods from the food bank in Lynchburg, who gets it from USDA. We're seeing a major reduction to what we used to get. We could count on every month potatoes, every month string beans, corn, the things that we all grew up on, things that we're familiar with. And we don't see that like we do now. So we're having a slowdown in cans. And we're starting, all of this is creating us to buy more. And the only place we can find right now is Kroger's on Ward Road. So we have to go on Kroger's on Ward Road. It's ironic because we also are assigned Kroger's on Timber Lake, the one that was giving us 300 pounds a week. And now has given us, we haven't seen it for months. So meat product. And then they give us a lot of desserts. We have a lot of desserts. And that's starting to decline. So Kroger's on Ward Road is letting us get not meat, but canned goods at cost. So no one else says that. No one else. You have to kind of negotiate a little bit. So and they've helped us a lot in that. We are also seeing that all of a sudden in October, we saw an increase of new clients, and we saw an increase just overall new clients come in that had never been to a food bank. So, because you can keep track of that. If you go to a food bank, it's in a system. So, the big reduction in meat is causing us to look at our funds a lot differently. So we're doing that. Another thing that popped up about 2 years ago was Blue Ridge Food Bank had done, they have all this data, it's a bunch of data. And they were beginning to look at new prospect, which is up in Pleasant View, and they were looking at us. And they saw that there was a gap. They saw that there were a lot of clients coming from 60 East and 60 West. We call it a food desert. It's nothing there. So they have to go to New Prospect or they come to us. Now, gas is not cheap, I don't think, these days. So they got a way out. Where do they go? What do? So they came to us about 2 years ago and presented to us, what do we have in plans? Well, it just so happened, our plan was to put together a campaign of churches and organizations throughout the county to join forces, particularly in this area, to set up a mobile food distribution. How that works is that, first of all, we got to get a freezer truck, you know, that you can, that has a lift gate, and that we would have to get that through a grant. We could get it. We could get it, no doubt. Because, did I tell you, we are faith-driven, and it works. All we have to do is ask, and we get. So, because we've got the numbers, and we've got a very good reputation. So, we were going to get that, but first we had to put that first piece of puzzle together, volunteers. Now, I know fire and rescue, Steve, and I know in any organization, volunteers are just not there. They're not there. If I lose my existing volunteers, I've got to really hustle. I've got to really hustle to get some. So, what happened in that campaign is that we tried something because we felt like we had to get it done. And I don't think we did such a good job, but we did send out letters to all the churches. And but I will say, you find out in Amherst County that you have a physical address and you have a P.O. box. So you got to hit the right one before you get the letter. So we stopped, because it was during December and January, so we stopped that. But we're going to revisit that campaign to try to focus on getting any church we can along the corridor there, and that we would get the product, load the product, deliver the product, unload the product. All we need are tables and volunteers. So we still have that focus to look at, because there's a need, and that's what we do. So that's kind of a quick summary of what's been going on since the last time I got here, other than the COVID bit. And so I welcome questions. Anything you might have or would like to know, please.
I have one, Gary.
Sure. Okay.
Do you have a handle or any kind of idea of how many people from the town proper that you serve?
From the town?
Town proper.
Yeah, you mean?
The town members.
Yeah, I just gave you 30%.
Okay, so that was the town.
Yeah, that was the town's people. Okay. Roughly 336 of that, 2,000.
All right.
So, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. It is a lot. Yeah. And it's grown. And you look at 782 from Madison Heights. And so you add those two up, and that's roughly 1,100. Where are the rest of them coming from?
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. Lynchburg. We have a lower end of Lynchburg. We have people that come across the river. So it's pretty exciting. You know, best thing I've ever been involved in, that you really get the feeling that you help people. And they know you, and they respect. It's just a mutual respect. So, good question.
Thank you.
Can I ask
yes, ma'am.
A clarifying question? So, with Mr. Watt saying that's 30%, that's not north, that's not east and west 60, and
no,
north,
ma'am.
That is in the.
That's
town.
In two. So it's by zip code.
Three. So.
By zip code.
By zip code.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So 24521 is the town, but that also is extended to outside of the town limits.
It could be. I mean, yeah. Okay. You're right.
I mean, I'm shocked at 336 people in the town.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's really
aware of
this
that,
end of the county.
That's okay. Exactly right.
Okay.
That's
thank
exactly
you.
Right. You know, they have this nice graph, and it's real cool. I mean, you know, it's got all these little lines. And then it's got Amherst, and it's got Madison Heights. Well, I mean, that's where we are. We served this. When we started off, that's all we ever saw. Not anymore. I mean, we'll pick up. The rest of that comes from all over. And in small amounts, but all over.
Thank you, Gary.
Yep. Thank you all very much. If you don't mind, I'm going to head that way.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, Kathy, Watts?
He's gone.
Okay, for the comments, remember you have 3 minutes and 2 signed up, so Steve Martin, you're first on the list here.
Thank you, Mayor. My name is Steve Martin, and I'm owner of Martin's Paint and Body Shop, a commercial rental at 513 South Main, which was given multiple business licenses between 2018 and 2023, has been shut down since August. We've lost almost $10,000 in rental income because one person filed a complaint. He did not like our gravel lot and came up with a 20-year ordinance passed in 2003 stating commercial lots will have to be either asphalt, concrete, brick, or paving stone. We attended the Planning Commission last Wednesday and do appreciate the efforts that are being made to define driveways and parking space surfacing rather than entire lots. However, nothing has been changed yet, and this has been going on for 8 months. We found it interesting that in one case, the town manager mentioned that the town and county should align requirements with each other since they both use the same personnel, inspectors, etc. However, she is against it in this case. The county allows business lots to be surface treated or asphalt on Business 29, but the manager was against allowing surface treat in the town. Even Mr. Driscoll with the town council mentioned how well done GL Staten surface treated lot at 807 South Main was done. Amherst Lawn and Garden received its business license after the 2003 ordinance was passed. So if one person files a complaint, will his business be forced to asphalt a driveway and parking? How about Sheila's Pet Grooming at 128 Whitehead Drive? It received a business permit after the 2003 ordinance with surface treating. Will one complaint cause them to have to spend thousands to asphalt a driveway and parking spaces? How will you handle the car repair business at 302 Lexington Turnpike or the business under it? They're both gravel. Both received business permits after 2003, so what happens if someone files a complaint on them? If you require an asphalt driveway on the business underneath, then it will stay empty because no one will ever pay to have that long driveway done. Massage therapy business at 220 South Main has a gravel lot, received a business permit within the last couple of years. So will they have to asphalt their driveway and parking spaces? How about the car repair business under Fisher Auto Parts? He got a business permit with a long gravel driveway and parking, so making him asphalt would probably force him to close. How about 357 South Main, 230 South Main, and 227 Mount Olive Road? They all have gravel lots and appear empty. They have to asphalt driveways and parking before reopening. 146 North Main is gravel and just recently got approval to operate an Airbnb. Since they are now a business, shouldn't they have to asphalt their driveway and parking?
Thank you.
Shouldn't the rules apply to all and not just one? Thank you.
Ms. Miller?
My name is Jerry Martin. I am co-owner of Martin's Paint and Body Shop. In the February Planning Commission meeting, Chairwoman Driscoll asked the town manager, if you know there's a violation, why do we have to have a complaint before it is enforced? In answering Mrs. Driscoll, the town manager said she didn't want to be accused of acting arbitrarily or capriciously by enforcing only the violations that she sees. However, the concern should be, are you in fact acting arbitrarily and capriciously by not enforcing violations that are obvious to you and every other person driving through town? Why is one serial complainer being given that much power? We definitely know who filed two of the three complaints on our properties. We wonder if he also filed repeated complaints on the equipment rental business that was at the Circle. At first, that business tried to display equipment rentals on Main Street, but that was unacceptable. So then he rented a lot between the Circle and the motel to display his rentals, but their gravel surfacing was unacceptable also. So then millings were put down. Even though millings are ground up asphalt, that was also unacceptable. Finally, after over $20,000 was spent and asphalt was put down, you would think everything would be okay, but no. Now it's called storage, and that requires privacy fencing to hide the same rental equipment that he's trying to display. Town residents need to be aware that small businesses won't stay or come here if they're continuously having complaints filed or have to pay ridiculous amounts to asphalt. That rental equipment business is gone now. Does the town look better with an empty asphalt lot? Are residents better off having only one equipment rental business within the town? I can remember when that same asphalt lot was just grass and used for farmers to sell fresh produce. Benny's used to sell fresh seafood, and families had yard sales. It was part of our hometown charm. Do residents want to see more asphalt and less green space? Asphalt is a hot, impervious surface. It's not good for the environment. It causes water runoff, which is, in turn causes soil erosion and pollution to nearby creeks and streams. The landowners have that lot up for sale now, but who would buy it knowing that the town serial complainer will just dig through 20-year-old ordinance until he finds something to complain on? Town residents and Zone B2 property owners, you need to pay attention to the ordinances being passed or upheld because small business can't even afford to asphalt driveways and parking spaces. Current town residents don't have to pay personal property taxes, but as businesses close or relocate, their tax revenue is lost, and eventually residents will have to make up that loss. Town officials should be following the Virginia law and recommendations from the state level. According to the Virginia Stormwater Management Handbook, we should reduce impervious surfacing. Any ordinance that requires only impervious surfacing is going against what the state recommends. I will leave a copy for you to review. Also, Virginia is a Dillon Rule state. You cannot enforce an ordinance that goes against the state. I will leave that paperwork also, and I'd like your attorney to look that over. And if you would get these to both the Planning Commission and the Town Council.
Next item is the consent agenda. But first, I will entertain a motion to accept the Town Council minutes as presented.
I'll make that motion.
A motion, Ms. Turner, may I have a second, please?
Second.
Second for Mr. Driscoll. Is there any comment? We have no comment. Ms. Wheaton?
I'm abstaining.
Okay, we got that. Got to count this now. Yeah. 3-0-1-1. Okay. Yes. Okay. Now for the check approval, Ms. Turner.
I would like to make a motion that we separate out the check approval rating and separate item 5928 so that that is approved separately than the rest of the check
motion. Is that a check number or an
item? That is the check item, or it could be the check number, mm-hmm. Tracy, do you know? 5928, that check number.
Okay, all right. I'll entertain a motion first that we separate these. Separate this.
She made the motion, didn't she?
She made
the motion. I need a second. I'm sorry.
I'll second.
I have a second. Is there any discussion on this?
I can explain.
So for
transparency for everybody, so the check registry actually has a check from Hill Harbor Corporation for the amount of $25.99. I feel like I need to not vote on that particular because that is my husband's corporation. So even though I'm not an owner, I am an officer of that corporation. So I would like when the town does purchase something from either one of our businesses, I want it to be transparent that I will not be voting for that. So if we can separate that out each and every month, I would appreciate it.
Okay. I think we can do the motion this time, and then we can just carry it from that.
That's fine.
Okay, so we've got that. Is there any further discussion? We're voting on separation at this point. Mr. Watts. Ms. Turner.
Aye.
And Mr. Driscoll.
Aye.
4-0-1-0 on item five. Okay, next, then we will take the remainder of the check approval. Can I have a motion, please?
Yeah.
Motion from Ms. Sweden. I have a second?
Second.
A second from Mr. Watts. Is there any discussion? There being Mr. Driscoll?
Aye.
Ms. Turner?
Aye.
Mr. Watts?
Aye.
And Ms. Sweden?
Aye.
Motion carried. 4-0-1-0. All of your... I'm glad you're checking on me there. Now for the Hill Hardware check. Can I have a motion to accept that?
I'll make a motion.
A motion from Mr. Watts. Can I have a second?
A second.
I have a second from Ms. Wheaton. Is there any other discussion? There being none, Ms. Wheaton?
Aye.
Mr. Watts?
Aye.
Ms. Turner?
Aye.
And?
Aye.
Here we go again. 3-0-1-1. Okay. All staff reports are attached, as well as other report from other meetings, the EDA, the Planning Commission, Robbie Lisa Water. Discussion items, approval of the street closure for the first responders event. Ms. McCullough.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We are planning for our first responders event. It is always the last Saturday in June. We're talking about a little bit different kind of event this year. We are thinking that we will not do a parade. That parade is never as many participants as we get for the Christmas parade. And to be honest, a parade is a tremendous amount of labor to do the street closure for that length. So every intersection has to have an officer. It's a lot. So what we would like to do is a smaller street closure from 2nd Street to Star Street for the afternoon, with the idea of having a kind of more street fair event from probably about 4 o'clock until just after 9 o'clock when the fireworks go. As per your policy, Town Council needs to approve the street closure request, then Mrs. Hunt will go ahead and get that to be up. So I'm asking for Council to give us that approval to proceed with it.
I'll entertain a motion for the street closure. A motion from Ms. Reed. May I have a second, please?
I'll second.
Second from Ms. Turner. Any discussion? Mr. Driscoll?
No. Aye.
Ms. Turner? We're discussing now, not now. Mr. Watts? And Ms. Wheaton? Okay, now we're going to vote. Mr.
Aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Ms. Turner,
aye.
Mr. Watts,
aye.
And Ms. Wheaton. Motion carried, 4-0-1. Next item is to set a public hearing. I understand this is going to be 3, but Ms. McGuffin?
Yes, so the Planning Commission is working on about 5 revisions to your zoning ordinance. There are 3 of them that they feel are ready to come to you. With that, I would like us to go ahead and move along on those. You can set them all as one block, but the 3 of them that we would be bringing to you would be definitions of outdoor display and outdoor storage, the addition of minor site plans, and then a revision to your conditional use permit for short-term rentals. So we would just ask you to set all of those with one motion for your next meeting.
Okay, I will entertain a motion to set these public hearings for our April meeting.
So moved.
A motion from Mr. Driscoll. May I have a second, please?
Second.
Second from Mr. Watts. Any discussion, Ms. Wheaton? Mr. Watts?
Yeah.
Ms. Turner?
Yeah.
And Mr. Driscoll? Yeah. Vote, Mr. Driscoll?
Aye.
Ms. Turner?
Aye.
Mr. Watts?
Aye.
And Ms. Wheaton?
Aye.
Motion carried, 4-0-1. Set the public hearing for the budget and capital improvement. Ms. McGuffin?
Yes, so this is you're following your budget calendar. This will be your public hearing on both your budget and your capital improvement plan again. I'm setting 2 public hearings, but you can set them both in one motion. I anticipate getting staff's proposed budget to you in the next 2 weeks for you to consider, and of course you can't vote on that at the same meeting you have your public hearing, so your calendar says Your budget public hearing would be in April with an anticipated adoption date of May if you're happy with it, and no later than June 30th if we still have more things to do.
I will entertain a motion to set that public hearing also for next month.
I'll make that motion.
Motion from Ms. Turner. May I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Driscoll, you won that chair. You got in there. Any discussion, Ms. Wheaton?
No.
Ms. Watts?
Aye.
And Mr. Driscoll?
No.
Vote, Ms. Wheaton?
Aye.
Mr. Watts?
Aye. Aye.
And Mr. Driscoll?
Aye.
Motion is carried 4-0-1. Next item, information on zoning statuses.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council has asked me to spend some time at this meeting to give just some information for council, for citizens, for everyone to see here and maybe have a little bit better understanding of what is happening with the zoning statuses. We have a lot of questions, and I think I'll be able to answer some of the Martin's questions when we go through these. I'm looking to see if I can find the little play button. Everything is so small, but I might not be able to find it, and we're just going to go like this. So hopefully I'm going to answer questions for everybody, and this will make things much clearer. I think we have some things that have been factually not quite correct, so we're going to try to get them right. All right, so first, everyone knows this one. I am not going to belabor 511 with surfacing. We have talked about this at multiple meetings, and I think Mrs. Martin or Mr. Martin, one of the two of you, read it out again, so I don't want to read that again. The one we have talked considerably less about but has a huge impact on some of the examples that have been given is this one, which is 515. The highlighted portion is the really important part. So to encourage use of older buildings in the downtown area, no off-street parking will be required in the case of a change in use of a building that is, number one, more than 30 years old, number two, in the Central Business District. However, this doesn't qualify in calculating parking for any new building footprint. So number three would be no change in the building footprint. So anytime you have something in the Central Business District, which on your zoning map is designated as kind of the small downtown area extending just a little ways onto Westport and 2nd Street, but mostly around Main Street, around the downtown, this would apply. So many of the things that have been brought up as examples of people saying, why doesn't this have paving? This is why. You're talking about a structure that is in that zoning district that is older than 30 years old, and even if it's had a change in use, it hasn't had a change in footprint. But hold on to that, because we'll come back to it. Another set of questions I really wanted to answer is we've been having some mixed up use of the words and the terminology for these words. So the first one is easy. The what does it mean to be legal? A parcel is considered to be legal if both the use is specifically enumerated in the zoning ordinance or is a like use to one of those who are specifically enumerated, and if it meets the underlying standards that exist into it for that use or for that zoning district. So it's legal if it meets the standards and the use is legal. So that's what legal means. The next one is where we start to get into a little bit more interesting, which is what does it mean to be legally non-conforming or just non-conforming? At the end of the day, a non-conforming use is something that is legal. It was started at a time when that was allowed. So somebody starts a use, they've established it, they've been doing this use, and then the code changed. So a great example of this is a lot of localities at some point outlawed junkyards. They were allowed to do so by state code, as Mrs. Martin mentioned. We're a Dillon Rural state. State code says you don't have to have these anymore and they're regulated. And so localities started taking these and saying you can't do them anymore. But if you were already doing a junkyard before that happened, you could still continue it. Your non-conforming status also really does stay with you and with the future owner if you keep doing the same thing. So if you had a junkyard, then they became illegal, but you were legally non-conforming, you can sell that junkyard and the next person can still do it. They have not lost that right. You can essentially buy and sell that non-conformity with the property. So non-conformity is a protection for both property owners and for users, that if you start something, you establish, establish it legally, you get to continue doing it. A lot of times people refer to it as grandfathering, which isn't, from a legal point of view, always makes the attorneys kind of get a little twitchy, but it does get to the underlying fact, which is that you are protected. The other part about the nonconformity, again, is that changing the use does not eliminate the nonconformity. So if I had a business and that business was maybe allowed, it was a legal use, and I sold it and another legal use came in, but that business never had that paved parking lot because it wasn't required at the time the original business was established, that nonconformity still exists and that protection is still there. So there are times you will look at things and go, well, why don't they have to have it, even though there have been 5 business licenses written in the last 5 years? It's because they were legally nonconforming and they're protected. So the one thing that really can trigger the need to upgrade is expansion. You expand more than 50%, you're guaranteed to have to do this. It gets a little bit questionable if it's less than 50%. Finally, what does it mean when something is not legal or illegal? Obviously, not legal and illegal mean the same thing. I tend to use not legal because I don't like to make it sound like somebody went out and tried to do a bad thing. We're talking about zoning. We're not talking about malicious acts that people do to each other. We're talking about zoning. So I tend to use the phrase not legal because it doesn't sound so awful. But what that means is that whatever it was never in compliance with the code. It was not established at a point when it was allowed. So again, this could be related to a use. That particular use, somebody tried to start a junkyard today. They went, I want to open up a junkyard at Brockman Park. It would never have been allowed. It would never have been legal. Or it could be in reference to a standard. So what we've been talking about is paving. So it was, at the time, not brought up to the standard that existed at the moment. The only remedy for something not being legal is to come into compliance with the code. Only things that were done legally, that were once legal, can become non-conforming. If you're not legal, there is nothing you can do to become non-conforming other than come into compliance with the code. So there's only one path to non-conformity in that protection, and that's being legal at the point of your establishment. One other point I wanted to make, we had the point made last time that 513 South Main had a site plan. 513 South Main did not have a site plan, it had a zoning certificate. So Mrs. Martin brought up, she said, you know, I was required to do a landscape plan. She was required to do a landscape plan. I think I've said this to one or two of the council members. I failed to catch that surfacing requirement, but I didn't fail egregiously. I looked in the ordinance. I noticed you didn't need a site plan. Our current ordinance says that any commercial structure under 2,000 feet does not require it. So I didn't require it. We did a zoning certificate. That's normally used for folks who are getting a shed in the backyard or adding a back porch or something like that. And it's really meant to, often when people are getting these, I'm kind of walking them through the process and helping them do a diagram to show they meet setbacks and so forth. A site plan is a more intensive process. It does require you to go before the Planning Commission. You know whether you had a site plan or whether you had a zoning certificate, because if it was a zoning certificate, it is signed by me on the bottom. If it is a site plan, that goes to Planning Commission for approval. That's what our code says. So when you do a site plan, you're really held much more to the idea of having to demonstrate you meet a variety of standards. It is my recommendation that you have a minor site plan process, so not requiring people to get an engineer, but a little bit more intensive process to help us all do a better job making sure that the Planning Commission gets to review these, and the Planning Commission will get to see and be a part of the process. So let's talk about some specific examples. One of the things that has been brought up repeatedly is Hill Hardware, and that there is a gravel lot behind Hill Hardware. And it has been said repeatedly that this is not legal or fair. Well, actually, this is exactly what legal looks like. Because Hill Hardware is in the Central Business District. According to GIS, that building was built in 1909, so it is far more than 30 years old. And there has not been a change in use for over 100 years. It's legal. It's not even non-conforming. It's actually legal because of the language we have in our central business district. They're not required to have parking. The idea in the central business district is you have street parking. So that Hill Hardware lot, actually legal because of the age of the building. Again, if they decided to do a new building footprint, we'd have another conversation. But their buildings are largely made up of things that were purchased over time. So, you know, Bill House is the old, you know, rescue squad. I mean, these are buildings that definitely meet the age requirement. 220 South Main Street has been brought up. That house was built in 1939. There have been a variety of changes of use. I have issued multiple building permit, I mean, not building permits, business license applications there and zoning certificates. Because again, this is in the central business district. It is over 30 years of age. They're not required to have parking. That gravel driveway, it's legal. Not illegal, not non-conforming, but actually legal. The next one, this is looking down beside the Masonic Lodge. And you can see, I think they probably at some point maybe had some surface treating on the alley, but then as you look to the back, what's really left there is gravel. Again, central business district. There's been multiple changes of use, signed multiple business licenses, but it's over 30 years of age. It was built in 1941. This is entirely legal. That gravel lot is allowed by our code. It's not non-conforming, it's not illegal. It is a legal lot according to our code, because it's in the central business district. Am I doing this one? No, okay. I got this one out of order. I'm gonna go grab the one I wanted first. Okay, so here's the house that is next door to the old Wells Fargo. And I really wanted to use this as the what if. Here's my little quiz time for you guys. This is in the central business district. It's over 30 years old. So if it has a change in use, somebody puts a business in this building, do they have to have a parking lot? No, they are legal the way they are. They can leave what they have, they're good. If this gets torn down and somebody wants to put up a new business building, do they have to have a parking lot? Yes. Does it have to be asphalt, brick, paving stones, or concrete? Yes, they then have to comply. So it's all about in the central business district, this question of, are you doing that adaptive reuse? Long ago it was determined we wanted to encourage people to use these older buildings, so that's allowed in the ordinance. So this is a great example of, we'll get to watch and see what they're gonna do with that. Moving on to the B2. In the B2, you don't have that permission to leave the existing situation and to not have parking. So here's a current situation going on, the old Johnson Senior Center. They're zoned B2. The folks that have purchased that building are converting it into senior apartments. They're doing an amazing and incredible job on what they're doing out there, and it just looks beautiful. The first building, so they have the old house, has got two apartments in it, and the first building in the front is going to have 5 senior apartments. It is very clear that for those 5 senior apartments plus the 2 in the building and the office building, they meet the parking requirement, and the parking out there is asphalt. I have told them when they move to the next set of buildings, they're actually gonna have to come in, and we're gonna have to demonstrate through probably, you know, at that point we'll probably have a minor site plan, and we'll do a minor site plan process to demonstrate that they can meet the parking requirement. For them, it will be about the number of spaces and not about the treating of it because they have an asphalt lot. But that's an example of how it's a little bit different in the B2. This is Cindy's Closet. Cindy's Closet is in the B2. This is an example of a legally non-conforming lot. So Cindy's Closet doesn't really have a real parking lot. You've got this gravel beside it. Sometimes people park there, but it's also a drive to back behind it. This is an example of where you had B2. You had an existing situation. There was a change in ownership and a change in use. However, because essentially you're talking about what was a commercial structure, which is still a commercial structure, the use is allowed, the previous use was allowed, they haven't expanded it over 50%, they haven't really expanded it at all. So what they've got there is a legally non-conforming use. When Cindy purchased this building, this commercial structure, she didn't just purchase a commercial structure. She purchased the non-conformity that went along with it. It's almost like having an insurance policy. You've bought a structure, and in that, you've also bought its existing situation. That doesn't just help you with your parking, it actually helps you on building code as well. If you have an existing commercial building, you don't have to do the same things for ADA as you do if you build a new building. So there really is a different situation you have based on, again, was it established legally? So this has been a commercial building for many, many, many years. It was established legally, so it gets to maintain its existing situation. Another one that has been brought up is the auto repair that is below Fisher. This is also B2. The change in use, the change in who's running that business, the change in ownership of the building, none of those things take away its existing legally non-conforming status. They get to continue with that. A physical expansion could take away that status. But the change in use, the change in ownership, or who's running that business, doesn't threaten that legally non-conforming status. The yard spot, the business, the actual lot that Jake DeMala bought from John Turner, is another example of a legally non-conforming B2 lot. It was developed legally. The change in use, the change in ownership, does not change its legally non-conforming status. They get to keep that gravel lot that's right by the front of the building there. They're legally non-conforming. An expansion of their business could create the situation where they have to come into compliance with the new code. You've heard a lot about 513 South Main. As Mrs. Martin said, we did do a landscaping plan along with that when we caught it on the zoning certificate. The building does meet setbacks. However, because this lot was not developed prior to 2002, it is not legally non-conforming. And the only remedy for it to become legal is to actually comply with the code. So because this doesn't meet the standard and it was developed after 2002, the remedy is simply to come into compliance with the code. Do I wish that I had caught this in 2018? Don't we all? I really wish I had. I wish we were not in this place. But my not catching it in 2018 does not remedy the situation. The only thing that remedies it is coming into compliance. Perhaps the Martins would have made a different decision in 2018 if I had said to them then, you have to pave it. But even that doesn't change the situation of where we are with the code. So those are the items I wanted to go over with you. I am happy to entertain any questions from council, and I hope that this helps.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. All right, move on. We have a vacancy on the EDA, so if anybody from council has somebody they would like to suggest, anybody out here, there is an application. You can contact Town Hall. They can tell you how to get to it online, and we will go from there. Oh, okay.
Excuse me, I'm getting older.
The floor is yours, please.
I am so sorry. Let me see if I can do it. Dickie Widener has said that he would not like his term is up and he's no longer going to serve. And so that's the vacancy, and we would love to honor him with the resolution. So I'm asking the mayor if he would do that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, so once the resolution gets, then we'll vote on. So I'll ask Ms. Vicki if you would please take care of that.
Yes, sir.
Good?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay. Next, matters from staff, Ms. Vicki.
Oh, me? No. No, sir.
Captain Walker.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Garrett.
No, sir.
Ms. Becky.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Charles. Good to see you. What's Tracy having?
She's up here.
Ms. Tracy.
I have nothing.
Ms. Garrett.
Yes, sir. I've talked enough.
Okay. Chief, can you, Captain, can you check the we have no comments to that, so we'll move on from matters for council. Ms. Wheaton?
No.
Mr. Watts?
No, sir.
Ms. Turner?
Nothing.
And Mr. Driscoll?
Nothing.
I have one, and I would just like to address this in reference to Dylan Wood that Ms. Martin brought up. We are under 15.2, the state grants the town or localities authority, and it also includes zoning. And also, we're granted authority for that by our town charter, which also grants that. So where it says the Dylan rule is by authority granted by the state to the localities, 15.2 plus our town charter takes care of it. So with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make
that
motion.
A motion from Ms. Wheaton. Can I have a second?
I'll make
I have a second from Ms. Turner. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 4-0-1. Everybody have a nice evening.
Yeah.